Welcome to Reflies, everybody. I am Ryan.
I am Josh.
And I am Greg with End Up Media.
And today we are going to be talking about space myths.
School this zone is... intolerant, Greg.
You can keep that one.
Not going to explain that joke. We're not lifting the curtain for that one. But anyway, we are going to be talking about space myths. This is a first for us, one that we've been wanting to do for a very long time. We invited a lot of people to try to do this. We held off because we're trying to get people to do this episode.
And nobody showed up.
We tried to get, this is not lying, in descending order of how truthful it is to not truthful it is. We tried to get Brian Wecht from Starbomb and Game Grumps. He just didn't answer us.
That's fine.
We tried to get Neil deGrasse Tyson. He told us how stupid we were.
I don't like him.
We tried to get Stephen Hawking, but then he died.
R.I.P.
Then we tried to get Stephen Hawking's voice box, and it turns out that they burned it with Stephen Hawking. So then we were going to try to get our best friend Casey to join us, but he has been busy.
He's with his brother.
Yeah. Cody. Hi, Cody. So do we have anything to mention before we get into the topics? Because I think this is going to be a fast one.
No.
All right.
I'm really excited about...
Do not talk about your fucking dubstep, okay? We're done with that. You've spent that one already.
I think I made the comment of the
day. We're not making that a thing. It's not going to be a bit.
I kind of want it to be.
Dude, if we ever do a live show, I'm going to come out just like, whoop, whoop, whoop.
I know.
And literally, it's all it is in the beginning. It's all it is. And it's come like, I'm still working on the track, guys.
This isn't my final version, bro.
What would you even call that? Akadubba? Or,
oh, no, it'll be a real deal, but it's just going to be the wub sound.
I like Stepapella, I think.
The first album is going to be called Wubs Day. You know, like Wednesday.
Don't take that. That's ours.
So it's you just saying Wednesday with like six marshmallows in your mouth. Okay, we really need to get into the episode. Space, the final frontier. I never watched Star Trek, so I don't know the rest of the words.
Fun fact, I didn't either.
Okay, I watched the movies.
Bro,
they were
if you
great.
Blaze enough, it's like you're launching outer space.
So. Regardless of it not being my forte by any means and me not retaining any of the physics of space from my older college days, I still love learning tons of things about it. And it turns out that movies have really given a big skew to a whole, and even music, especially for one of Josh's topics.
Yeah.
It has been given a giant skew to the idea of things that might or might not happen in space.
Can I ask y'all a question? I just have a fun idea. What movie is your favorite depiction of space?
My favorite movie of all time, 2001 A Space Odyssey. All
right.
I knew Josh? Ryan was going to go with that, so I'll go in a different direction. Sunshine.
That is my, if not second, no, it's really hard, but it's in my top five.
The incorrect answer is Gravity.
Nice.
No, Gravity is really good if you saw it 6 years ago.
Inside the IMAX.
In 3D.
Yes. Probably Sunshine. There's some other ones that I really do enjoy, but Sunshine popped in my head. I just really love that film.
That's space art.
I know, but it's still like a really cool depiction of space.
I mean, obviously, I would love to say Star Wars, but at the same rate, they could just make it like seem like underwater, and it would be the same breaking of physics. It doesn't matter. It's a space opera. It doesn't matter.
Interstellar is also a close one.
Yeah.
Interstellar was weird, but I liked it.
I was going to I'm kind of breaking the rules because I said a movie, but honestly, I've been watching The Expanse lately.
I keep hearing
it. People love it, dude.
It's phenomenal. It's a little soapy at times, but after watching that, I look at, say, a DC movie or any TV show that tries to do CG and botches it, and I go, you have no excuse. I've watched The Expanse, and it is insanely immersive. And I've never seen anything like it.
Really?
Not just the space, but like the space stations and the rooms and the ships. Like, it's impressive. I highly recommend The Expanse.
Where does Space Goes Coast to Coast rank in your list?
Oh, man. I mean,
here's
the best talk show in the universe.
Here's where people will get mad at me. And I think Greg would be on my side for this one. But
I won't be.
Here's where people start unsubscribing. By the way, subscribe to us or write a review on iTunes. We haven't said it in a very
long
time.
We have not
said
it in a very long
end.
Time, yeah.
Please, we just need a little bit of a bumper. Over 100. Thank you so much for that.
Yes, but, in particular of Apple Podcasts, do that.
But you gave us our little taste and we want more. I think one of my favorite space-related things, aside from Mass Effect, is honestly No Man's Sky because that is my absolute fucking chill out game. I don't care how
I enjoy it.
I don't care how empty that game is. Do you know how empty space is? So
that's actually a good comparison.
I do like landing on the planet and like scanning animals and stuff.
That sounds a little bit weird out of context.
I don't know. Landing on plants and scanning animals sounds pretty contextual.
I follow it.
So there goes once again us trying to make a short intro.
Okay.
We're going to jump into the first topic. And the first one is going to be, I think, the most morbid of all the ones we are covering. And it is going to be kind of a survey of the effects of the vacuum of space on the body.
Because space is a vacuum.
Yeah. So we can actually use movies that we've seen as a reference for this. I am particularly thinking Interstellar. Somebody froze to death in Interstellar, didn't they? No, it was gravity.
There you go.
It was gravity. They froze to death. That's one of the ones that we're going to talk about. As soon as, like, this is the idea of, like, the effect of the body sans a spacesuit. Because what the spacesuit is, number one, it is a marvel of human engineering.
Mm-hmm.
It is its own self-contained environment that is able to withstand some of the harshest conditions that exist, period. And I'll get into those conditions in a little bit. But this is going to be like if you're just up Schitt's Creek without a paddle and your spacesuit has broken, or for some reason you've been ejected out of the escape pod.
Shower thought. A spacesuit? Just self-contained breathing apparatus? Scuba? Or just SCBA,
see,
sorry?
The deal is spacesuits involve a little bit more than just being able to breathe.
Yeah, I get that. But like in its truest form, right? Like I'm not far off, huh? Or am I? I mean, if I am, it's
scuba,
fine.
Scuba was probably the template.
I will expand upon that, but okay, no, they're not synonymous with each other.
I don't mean to put you on the spot. It's just literally something I just thought.
No, it is an important thing because technically, yes, astronauts do train in spacesuits underwater before they go up to space.
Yeah, okay.
So the reason why there is a difference is because you have to have your own atmosphere in there, and mm-hmm. you also have to have your own protection from the perils of space, which you may have actually come across at some point in some of your research.
I did. I'm glad you look at all the topics because I don't.
So the things that I'm going to cover are the idea that
every time Ryan talks it's a new experience. I don't know what he covers.
It's wonderful, isn't it? So what we're going to talk about is the idea that the body will explode once it is exposed to space.
I've heard that.
Another one is that your blood boils immediately as soon as you're exposed to space.
I've also heard like a freezer burn.
Yeah, and then freeze immediately. Those are the three ones that I'm going to hone in on, and you can hear about them in different articles or see them like parroted in movies.
Different iterations,
there's
yeah.
There's a whole lot of different things. And once again, I'm going to go ahead and taunt, flaunt? I don't know. I just did taunt and flout.
That's fine.
2001 A Space Odyssey, probably giving the most accurate depiction of death in space because that movie is a masterpiece and Stanley Kubrick is still a prick. So we're going to go ahead and start with the idea that space actually... In the most technical physical terms, which I still think there's some wiggle room for debate, has no temperature.
Yeah.
And the reason for this is according to an article on Harvard's website, the Harvard.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes. In thermodynamic terms, temperature is a function of heat energy given an amount of in a given amount of matter.
Mm-hmm.
And space, by definition, has no mass. So matter has mass,
right?
But if there's no matter there, there's no mass. Exactly. So furthermore,
isn't that what they say in Spanish culture is no mass?
Oh my God.
Okay.
But couldn't you argue like the light particles flying through? I mean,
photons don't have mass, yeah. Motherfucker.
I was gonna say that.
Unless literally there's some Scientific American article that just came out like a day before I said this, and somebody's going to give me a penalty shot. I'm not doing a penalty shot over Girl Scout cookies, motherfucker. You know who I'm talking about. Anyway, so furthermore...
Yes, yeah, Steve!
Scuba Steve!
Some guy listening named Steve is like, oh!
Yeah. Furthermore...
Heat transfer
cannot occur the same way in space, since two of three methods of heat transfer, conduction and convection, cannot occur without matter.
Yeah. I basically the only way I can think is like a heat tracing or
the like, only one left is just heat radiation.
Yes. Sorry. I was trying to get to that. I couldn't think of the proper term. Yeah.
Yes. Convection there needs to be at least some sort of gas in order for it to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And conduction, it needs to be like contact with another piece of matter.
Right.
just the way like metal conducts heat when you put something hotter to
the
it.
The only problem with the heat radiation is that something needs to be so hot to begin with. And there are, like, you know, the sun is really hot, but there isn't a whole lot of things, to my knowledge, don't give me a penalty shot, that will heat up other things because it's so hot. Because, I mean, I'm talking in the whole conglomerate of space, you know?
So the thing is that I guess I should elaborate on this a little bit more. And once again, I'm a little bit rusty on my physics, but the way I understand it is that the reason why you get so hot in most situations is because the air around you is mm-hmm. that hot.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't consider the fact that oxygen, nitrogen, helium, all the other things that make up our general atmosphere or the air we breathe is matter.
Mm-hmm.
May it be very small and
yeah.
unobservable by the human eye, it is still matter that is capable of conducting energy in the form of heat. So
hey,
that
Ryan,
is,
what's the matter?
This guy.
When you take out that air, it becomes a lot harder to become hotter, faster,
better, stronger,
sexy.
Okay.
So, with this being said, there is still another way of this happening, which is just heat radiation, which is the least efficient way to do it most of the time.
Yeah, that's basically what I was trying to get to. I'm not good with words. Hard,
so UV rays from a close from a close enough star. Let's assume you're not in this solar system. It's just a close enough star.
Yeah, but we're in America. We're in the solar
yes,
system.
Yes, the UV rays would also cause massive burns to the body.
Yeah.
Through this heat radiation, if you're close enough to it. The reason why we don't burn up immediately, I mean, in some places on Earth, you can be out there for 5 minutes and get extreme burns, particular deserts, because of the way the atmosphere, we have a stratosphere, an ionosphere, and several different things, the ozone, to protect us from UV rays. The ozone effect is a very real thing. I'm gonna go ahead and do that hot topic now. different from global warming or whatever you want to call it, climate change. That's real too, whatever.
Al Gore.
But yes, Al Gore is real too.
Okay, good.
We are bunking Al Gore. He is a real person.
Big if true.
But anyway, we have these protections from them. And even though you still need sunscreen to at least avoid some, you know, minor burns, you when you're in space, you don't have that protection of all the different particles in the stratosphere or, you know, the ozone layer, mainly being, I want to say, CO3. Okay, I'm not going to go ahead. I'm going to edit that one out. Otherwise, you will eventually freeze, but this will not be the cause of death. The primary heat transfer left is thermal radiation from the body, which is much slower due to no other matter, as we said before, mm-hmm. being present to transfer the energy to. There are no oxygen molecules for you to transfer your heat to. It just kind of stays there and just slowly just shoots out and does not have much to attach to. What will kill you instead of freezing to death, which, you know, I think... I don't know. I hear freezing to death is much better than burning to death for sure.
I would imagine so.
I think on the air, on the like hierarchy of things, drowning is the most peaceful. Freezing, you go through a little bit of a crazy period where you start taking off your clothes because you think you're getting too hot. But burning to death is just the one you don't want.
Well, freezing to death, you eventually just kind of fall asleep from hypothermia, right? In some instances.
I'm not going to get into that one because I don't know. And we actually did cover this at some point. Listen to our survival myths episode. it's a way to get you to listen to our older stuff.
There you go.
So the thing is that although negative pressure from the vacuum of space, which I should mention, space is a vacuum.
I think we covered that from the top.
Yes, and I think there is a Brack quote from...
Space is a vacuum,
yes.
End quote.
So, although negative pressure from the vacuum of space will not tear a body limb from limb and explode you, per se, the pressure would either A... cause oxygen to expand and rupture in the lungs, similar to decompression sickness from scuba diving accidents, as you were saying. So there is kind of a similarity there.
Yeah.
The way the bends works.
I was going to ask that. Is it the bends pretty much?
Yeah, it's kind of like that, except much worse. So if anybody isn't familiar with what the bends is when you go to a certain depth, I believe it's beyond 40 meters, and I should be able to tell you this. As a certified advanced scuba diver, I should be able to tell you this because I've had to avoid decompression sickness. I think after a route in 40 feet. I want to say it's 40 feet. After 40 feet, when you're going up, you have to go up at a very regulated, slowed time frame. and exhale as you're going up. You can take stops and inhale, but you have to keep exhaling because as you are going up, the pressure of the sea starts lifting up on you. Like when you go down there, everything is extremely pressurized, including your own body and including the oxygen and helium mixtures or nitrogen mixtures that go into your lungs. Mm-hmm. And when you go up, those start expanding. So if you're still holding that in, you can blow the fuck out of your lungs.
Mm-hmm.
And that is generally what the bends is, or I guess in a more scientific way, it is just your lungs being overexposed and also all of your blood vessels being overexposed to nitrogen and oxygen, like to the point where you can't take it anymore. It's really not fun to go through. Luckily, I've never had to experience that, and most people haven't, but it is scary. This is kind of what happens in space because you're going from, if your spacesuit breaks, from regular, you know, one atmosphere pressure, maybe more, to breaking to literally zero atmosphere. That giant change will just blow everything up that's still in your lungs if you're not exhaling immediately.
Like the movie Rocket Man with Harlan Williams.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Wow, we never mentioned Rocket Man for our favorite space movies.
I just thought about it.
So that's the first thing. And the other thing that could happen from the negative pressure is it can cause liquids to have a much lower vaporization point, causing something called embolisms throughout the bloodstream.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
This vaporization could be considered boiling because it's going from a liquid to a vapor. That's effectively boiling. So, yes, your blood would boil if left unprotected in space for long enough. That's pretty terrifying to me.
Yeah, I'm not a fan.
Your body could swell up to about twice its size by most estimates, but it's not likely to explode in the most conventional sense where it's just going to burst and blood goes everywhere. And the estimates for death in space when exposed to just the raw vacuum of space is that you would pass out in about 15 seconds and then die of asphyxiation in about 90 seconds, and then your body would freeze or your blood would boil and all that other stuff would take effect, which, you know, that actually sounds like a mercy killing to me. Pass out in 15 seconds?
Yeah.
15 seconds of miserableness, that's it? I think that'd be the worst 15 seconds of your life because there's none after that.
Well, yeah, that's a fair point.
But, you know, with this being said, so I guess to cap that up for the actual myth is that you're not going to explode, but your blood does kind of boil pretty fast. And you will not freeze to death, but your body will eventually freeze. But there are real things to consider, like the long-term effects of space travel, like, say, a journey to Mars. Or,
I'm going to cover this a little bit.
Or a journey to somewhere farther than the moon, or further than the moon, rather. And I have this awesome chart from NASA's website that lists the different things that happen if you're in space for long enough, long-term space travel. This is even if you have a spacesuit. Let's start from, do you want to start from bottom to top or top to bottom from the body?
Let's start from the bottom, now we're here, so.
Start from the bottom? Okay, bottom to top. So, starting in the legs, fluid redistribution from the legs to the upper body results in 10-30% decreased leg circumference. So, it looks like you skip leg day no matter what.
Yeah, right?
Stresses space flight, including ionizing radiation, that comes up a whole lot, and I think it's going to come up in your topics, results in compromised immune system function, blood plasma volume is reduced by increased kidney output, elevated calcium secretion results in increased risk of kidney stones. Jesus Christ, that's terrible. Can you imagine having all these other plethora of things and you have to piss out a kidney stone?
Well, do you know where all that extra calcium is coming from?
Milk?
It's the breakdown of their bones.
Yeah.
Their bones get all whittled. Like,
I'm pretty
that's
sure
workouts
that's
going to
show up here in this chart.
Okay,
yeah,
that's literally like what they're, like,
you're
pissing out. Yeah.
You're not wrong. Musculoskeletal adaptation to microgravity leads to loss of muscle mass and bone density. Mm-hmm. That, just as Greg was saying. Heart stroke volume decreases as cardiovascular system adapts to microgravity, meaning the only little bits of gravity that you're exposed to. There are several different forms of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that's not on Earth is pretty much the ones you're not adjusted to.
Well, I remember there was years ago, I was reading that NASA developed this like basically workout machine.
Well, Hatfield talked about that. Yeah, when he came
I was
going to
say,
yeah.
I remember Hatfield talked about it.
And he said the one thing they can't crack those hips. That's bad.
Is it Hatfield or Hatfield? I don't remember.
I don't remember. I say Hatfield. But anyway, he talked about how like the hardest thing they have when they get home, their hips hurt like crazy because there's no real good workout that prevents the bone density from dropping in their hips.
Yeah.
So you get to experience what it's like to be 80 before you're 80.
Kind of.
So anyway, the heart stroke volume decreases, and this results in a red blood cell number that also decreases. And let's see, here comes the head. Nasal congestion due to fluid redistribution causes anosmia. That's the first time I've seen a cause of that, which is the loss of smell.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and diminished taste. So that's why they can eat that astronaut awful. Ice cream, because that tastes like shit on Earth. I'm going to tell
it's
you right now.
Awful.
I've had every flavor and I've hated every one of them.
I have not enjoyed it either.
And Ryan eats everything.
Just about. Last two is eye abnormalities may arise due to UV exposure and increased intracranial pressure.
That makes sense. It's not
something we've mentioned UV exposure. By the way, you will burn to a crisp if you're near or nearby sun from that heat radiation. I know that heat radiation is least effective, as we had talked about.
Oh, it's still a possibility, though.
You're near one of the strongest fucking sources of heat in the universe, which is a star.
Yeah.
So... and then lastly, exposure to high energy cosmic radiation increases risk of neurodegenerative disease.
Hey, look at you.
So you just start not thinking goodly. So those are things to consider when you are in space. So consider,
me was smart, now me not smart.
Consider that, Lance Bass. Moving on, Josh, your topic.
Why say so many words and few words do trick?
When me president, they see.
So just as Ryan struggled with saying a bunch of words, buckle in, all right? That's all I'm going to say. So the first topic I'm going to be covering is about the dark side of the moon. Is that a real thing? I mean, what is the dark side of the moon?
Hey, you know what?
Here it comes.
Roger Waters told me he'd see me on it.
I'll see you on the
I've been to
that
laser show so much. I love it.
I went with you, too. I enjoyed it. The last time I went was with you, actually.
I like you, Monty.
I like you, too, Monty.
We should do the Dark Side of the Rainbow, where you sync it up.
Oh.
What, and we do a laugh track over that?
No, just Wizard of Oz. No, I'm not doing it for them. I'm doing it for ourselves. Screw the audience. I don't care what y'all think.
There we go.
Unless you go to www.rumorflies.com/Patreon.
HTTPS. -.
Be secure.
/ www.
Shit, he broke. Okay. He's caught an infinite loop. AI Ryan, shut down.
So what is the dark side of the moon? Is it even a real thing? Does anyone know? Am I talking to myself kind of thing? You know, so to Ryan's point, The Dark Side of the Moon is one of the greatest albums of all time. I have that in my notes. I wanted to point it out. This is not a
hot take.
Yeah, this is not a platform to discuss why you would be wrong and disagree. But of course, the correct term is actually...
He wrote this out.
I did. I was very adamant.
He is ready.
You just like had a philosophy teacher syllabus read out just now.
Hey, but the correct term is what I'm trying to get to is the far side of the moon. Okay.
Well, I've never heard "I'll see you on the far side of the moon." We're going with the dark side, motherfucker. Mm. Okay, we also have Transformers: Dark of the Moon, the sleeper
hit such
of
bullshit.
The entire franchise.
I remember watching it and going, "Why didn't you just call it Dark Side?"
Well, we know that's nonsense because we all know the secret Nazi moon base is on the dark side of the moon. I saw Iron Sky, the documentary.
Was that any good?
It's stupid. It's okay. It's 30 minutes hilarious, and then the sketch goes on too long.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I'm okay with Nazis being on the moon, so long as they're
not
here.
No. There's an hour and a half movie, and it just drags. The jokes just run to the ground.
Mm, nice. I'm not saying that the dark side of the moon is not dark, but just because you can't see it, does that mean that there is an absence of light?
Archer from Small Soldiers. Wind. Just because you can't see it doesn't mean it's not there.
So the far side of the moon, as is correctly termed, Ryan, is the side of the moon that is always facing away from the Earth. Okay?
Okay.
So there is two sides of the moon. There's one side that you always see and the far side, which you never see.
So that is actually a thing. So my idea in that was that like...
They'd have to be perfectly synced, right? Like how do we never see the other side?
No, that means that the moon does not have a rotational day.
Let me get to it.
Yeah, okay. I'm curious now.
Okay.
No, that's what I'm interpreting right now.
Yeah. Okay. The far side of the moon is rugged with a shit ton of impact craters with only a few flat lunar
Maria is how I'm going to say it. It's spelt Maria. I don't think it's Maria. Lunar Maria is those dark spots you see when you look up at the moon. Like when you look at the moon at night and you see those dark spots on the moon itself.
Does that like translate to like lunar seas or something like that?
Yes, that's exactly what it translates to.
I would assume it was going to be like shadows from the craters and stuff. Like, cause
no, it's a crater big enough to fill with fucking water.
They basically, old astrologists and philosophers used to think that there was... Whatever. Those words. They used to believe that there was volcanoes on the moon. So that's where the term comes from. Because they thought it was seas created from the volcanoes. Yeah, I did my research.
I would sure hope so.
You know, I was going to make a little... Thanks, Craig. I was going to make a little bit on flipping the script and saying there was like... a flat moon and hollow earth thing, but hollow earth is totally already a conspiracy theory.
Yeah, it is.
So you have hollow moon and hollow earth.
Nah, it's obviously creep filled.
Well, that's actually a good argument. Why, if the earth's flat, why isn't the moon flat?
I mean, nobody said it wasn't.
Where's the flat moon society?
We're all fucking babies, and the sun and the moon are just mobiles in the sky for us. That's why the earth is flat.
Yeah, so there's actually more lunar maria on the front side of the moon than the far side of the moon. The back side, the dark side, whatever you want to call it. There's more in the front than the back.
Yeah, but which from is a certain perspective, man.
But back to the topic at hand, is it really dark? And the answer is no, it's not. It's just as dark as the side that we always see.
So I guess that was the question. It's like, is there a side of the moon that we never get to see whatsoever?
Yes. Well, to say we never get to see it is incorrect because it depends on what you mean.
With our eyes.
Yeah. No, you can. You can see parts of it depending on where you are at Earth.
Okay.
Up to like 4% or something like that. So it's not like the whole thing.
But there's a section that never faces us?
Yeah.
How does that work? I mean, wouldn't we have to be in like a synchronized, not synchronized, but like wouldn't they have to be going the exact rotation to avoid it? Like
the phrase is called tidal locking, and if you shut your trap, I'll get to it.
Damn.
As I was saying,
I'm glad you took that bullet for me.
I'm just kidding with you. The far side of the moon and the side that we see both experience 2 weeks of sunlight followed by 2 weeks of darkness. Okay. So why is it that we only see one side of the moon? Well, first off, kind of think about it. Both the Earth and the Moon revolve around the Sun, so it's not like the Earth is revolving around the Moon or the Moon is revolving around... I'm sorry. It's like the Moon is revolving around the Earth or the Earth is revolving around the Moon. So they're both revolving around one stationary object, right?
Yes.
The Moon's not revolving around the Earth?
I think it's called tidal locking, Greg. Shut your
trap. Yeah, go ahead. I'm curious. No, legitimate thing. I think if people who are listening, my knee-jerk reaction to hearing
the Moon is not... No, I thought the Moon revolved too.
Yeah. I assumed it... So it... You said revolved. It doesn't orbit
Earth? No, orbit and revolve are two different
things. Right. But you said it doesn't revolve around the Earth, so that's why I was confused because the terminology sound like orbit. Sorry,
yes.
Continue.
Okay.
Sorry.
I feel like I just got myself a penalty shot, and I don't know why.
No. I think that me and Greg are looking like kindergartners right now because we are like legitimately
perplexed. I'm not sure where this is going, and I'm very curious.
It's called synchronous rotation. I nailed that word. Go me. Or for the people in the back of the room like me, it is called tidal locking, right? So tidal locking occurs when the long-term interaction between a pair of co-orbiting astronomical bodies, like the Earth and the Moon, drives the rotation rate of at least one of them into the state where there is no more net transfer of angular momentum. Okay?
That makes sense.
So the way I'm picturing it right now is... Yeah, the Earth is spinning in two different ways. It is going around the Sun. That's the orbit.
Mm-hmm.
And then it spins.
Mm-hmm. And you can't have perfect preservation of momentum. However,
it's going to go somewhere. Imagine that there is a string attached from the Earth to the Moon. That string would not allow that Moon to be able to rotate while it's spinning with the Earth.
You got it.
Okay.
You got it.
I think that's an easy way to approach it.
Yeah, that's actually a very, really digestible way to approach
it. It's like a shot put thrower going around the Sun constantly.
Or what was that?
But he never lets go of the Moon. That'd be really weird if the Moon just like disappeared one day and just went off into space. No more werewolves.
No more Saiyans.
What was that toy back in the day that you would put on your leg and whip it? Was that it?
No, whippets are what college people use.
It's
called a skip it.
Skip it. Okay. Easily confused.
Bop it.
Yeah, twist it, spin it, turn it. Okay. So this does not mean that the rotation and the spin are always perfectly synchronized throughout an orbit, as there can be some back and forth transfer over the course of an orbit, but it's pretty relative that they pretty much stay the same. So the simple way of putting it is that tidal forces, well, besides how Ryan put it, because that was a great analogy, dude. The simple way is the tidal forces from the Earth have slowed down the moon's rotation to where the same side is always facing directly at Earth.
So that's even more interesting. When you say tidal forces, I thought it was a one-way transaction where the moon affected our tides, but apparently our tides also affect the moon in some sort of way.
I want to say that is correct, but I did not do enough research into it.
It just, our gravitational pull. Y'all just made lyrics click for me from As Cities Burn's second record. The song's called Tides, and the chorus is, "Oh, how strange that I moved to the voice of the moon." I just realized that must be exactly what it's referencing.
Deep cut. They did not ask us for this promo, but As Cities Burn is a very beloved band to me and Greg, I think, from a long time ago.
And Son, I Loved You At Your Darkest.
Fucking amazing record.
Bloodsucker. Come on. I listened to that album literally probably a month ago. Not nice. Even exaggerating.
But yeah, that's funny. I just realized, like, God, he was such a good writer. Yeah. So good.
I actually, fun fact, I knew Pascal, the bassist. Yeah, so that's a really great analogy, the way Ryan put it. But yeah, so there is a dark side of the moon, if you want to call it that, but it's actually the far side, if you want to be scientifically correct. So it depends on how you want to. You
want to
sound stupid or not, whatever. It's on you. So, but yeah, so we pretty much only see one side of the moon at all times. But to say that it's dark, no, because it's just as dark as the side that we see. Because, I mean, do you see the full moon all the time?
Well, you're not wrong.
thank you, Ryan.
But I guess there's at some point while we're rotating that the sun actually does reflect its rays off the side of the moon that we do not conventionally see.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
Therefore, it's not never getting sun. There, I guess this is a two-layered parfait of a myth.
Yeah.
It's two different things you have to address.
Yes.
Mine was from the perspective of there's a side of the moon that we never see, which it turns out is true.
Pretty much, yeah.
However, it's not true that it never receives any light from the sun.
Correct.
Because sometimes it's in full exposure.
Yes.
And well, that's effectively what an eclipse is.
Yeah, there you go. So I was waiting for someone to make that connection. So, yeah.
Thank you for letting me walk myself to the water.
You're welcome, buddy. That's what I'm here for.
All right. So, next topic we're going to cover is going to be whether the Great Wall of China can be seen from the moon.
That's a good one. I like that one. I'm glad we're covering it.
Wait.
And or space.
Wait.
What?
I'm like 80% sure we've addressed this question.
We have absolutely not.
I don't think
I so. Haven't.
Or maybe it's a Snapple fact.
Probably
like one
that.
Of the Snap judgments. I remember somewhere
Snap
dealing with this.
Snap judgments are on the past.
I know. No. Let it might not. Die. It might not be Rumor Flies related.
Kill it if you
I
have
distinctly
to.
Remember looking into this subject. Sorry, go ahead.
So.
Topical.
You guys have heard this to some degree.
Yeah, yeah,
obviously,
yeah.
Greg has.
It's the man-made wonder that can be seen from space. Sure.
And Josh, yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. So it's kind of funny because.
Can I give my theory? Can I give a guess?
Please.
Is that okay? Yeah. From the moment I ever heard, I thought it was complete bullshit because
so
it's not
did
that
I.
thick.
Yeah.
It's long but not thick. Either.
I was gonna make a dick joke seeing it from space, but I wanted to be mature.
But it's like it's like. The actual width of it is, what, 30 feet?
And not to mention the fact that the parts that are preserved is the touristy parts. There's parts of it that are torn down. And you can't.
I'm glad you mentioned it. Yeah. So the Great Wall of China is over 2,000 miles long in some part. Over 2,000 miles and years are two different things.
Yeah, very different.
In some parts, it is over 2,000 years old, and it is not exactly, but by best estimates, 13,171 miles. Or for anybody that's not in America, 21,196 kilometers. It's pretty impressive. Mm-hmm. I would say it's pretty great.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to avoid.
God.
That's good.
Okay, I'm putting a moratorium on it right now. You guys know exactly what I'm saying. We're not going to make those jokes.
It's been bubbling.
Can we do Rumor Fly Scouts Honor? This is an R in sign language.
Okay. Yeah.
It's also
Ryan.
It's also for like breaking a promise. Obviously. So the myth originated, believe it or not, before anyone had actually been to space.
Yeah.
Well before then.
I can imagine.
I it makes a lot of sense.
Well, you got to think that when they talk about these wonders of the world, that they're so, I mean, pun intended, wondrous and magnificent.
It's people being fucking haughty, but I found the origins of this.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I did not think I would find...
We haven't had a juicy origin in a while.
I did not think I would find this. It's a threefold origin in progressive order of them making it more...
I was going to say an origami origin, but that's the wrong culture.
The wall just got 10 feet wider.
Boy, it's on me.
Off the show. Penalty shot.
I just assumed the section was going to get cut. Continue.
So, in 1754, a man named William Stukeley, an English antiquarian, which I think is oldie terms for archaeologist.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
I think it's the closest analogy, unless there are now antiquarians that run antique shops.
I don't know. Yeah.
He wrote in a letter.
They collect antique aquariums.
After seeing the wall, posited that this mighty wall of 40 miles, it can be seen from the moon. He said it can be and may be discerned at the moon, not on the moon, but at the moon. So if somebody happens to go there, Jules Verne style, apparently you can see the Great Wall from the moon. That was in 1754. That's before the greatest country in the world was the greatest country in the world.
Would he say that the wall was big?
Shut the fuck up. Oh, my God. We are not going to do this.
This has to be thought was big.
This was repaired in 1895 by English writer Henry Norman.
You're such an asshole.
Henry Norman went further by saying it was the only man-made structure visible from the moon. And his reasoning was he could see craters on the moon.
No. Come on.
It was like, I can see craters on the moon. How big are those fucking craters? Doesn't matter. You can probably see the wall from there.
That's so stupid.
I figured that people would get better logic as the years went by, but
yeah.
You know, a lot of things disprove that as seen by today. Doesn't matter. You can see craters on the moon, therefore the moon can see your wall. And this myth was most likely propagated as like to what it is today.
Big if true, huh?
By none other than Ripley's Believe It or Not in the 1930s, which I am so surprised that Ripley's Believe It or Not has not come up once in this entire podcast that I want to do an entire episode on Ripley's Believe It or Not.
Do you want to do an episode on Ripley's Believe It or Not or on fucking Dean Cain?
Both.
Okay. Because for some reason, whenever somebody says Ripley's Believe It or Not, I've been to the museum, but I just picture Dean Cain.
Exactly. The Robert Ripley was a completely different person than Dean Cain.
Yeah, but I guess I used to watch the show. I believe it was on TBS.
I think that's the only like role that Dean Cain has overshadowed somebody in. Because I will still say like some people know he was Superman.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
but not
yeah.
anybody cares that he was Superman.
No.
Anyway, so in the 1930s,
Nick Cage is a more notable Superman than Dean Cain,
and he didn't even get the chance to be Superman.
Exactly.
So in the 1930s, Ripley's put out
a
little cartoon that referenced the wall as the mightiest work of man, the only one that would be visible to the human eye from the moon.
Dean Cain said that?
No.
Oh, okay.
Somebody that wrote the cartoon, probably not even Robert Ripley, said that. So pretty much that is where this got to be common knowledge.
Yeah,
that where you could see the wall from the moon. Well, this was quickly shot down by none other than Neil Armstrong after the 1969 moon landing, where he said that the Great Wall is, quote, definitely not visible from the moon. So,
are we going with primary sources on this one?
Yes. I put that in quotation marks.
Okay.
And yes, I would like to hear Dan Carlin say that in his words.
It was like the moon, but weirder.
Technically, you get a penalty shot from that, but I pretend fine. I didn't hear it. So, yeah, Neil Armstrong himself shot this one down. It's like, nope, can't see that goddamn wall.
Do you think he was up in space and he's like, so where's that goddamn Great Wall of China?
I think there was a big fucking checklist for all the astronauts once they got to the moon to figure out. First thing they did, scooped a little bit of out, tried to melt it like fondue. Turns out the moon isn't made of cheese.
Fair enough.
I think they knew that at that point, but you can't be sure until you try firsthand.
Everyone knows the moon's made of cheese, Gromit.
If the moon was made of cheese, would you eat it?
And especially, it wasn't green cheese. So they did that and tried.
What?
Yeah, I've always heard it's made of green cheese instead of cheese.
I've never heard that.
You never heard green cheese? That's the specifics. Somebody back me up. Twitter.
Okay.
Okay, for the third time, you can't just say Twitter. and things post on Twitter. We've been over this, Ryan. We have tried this.
I yell at my phone all the time. I just say, Greg is not safe in school zones, Twitter. And then
www.creethoughts.gov.
/creethoughts. The world is not ready for that. It's just a Microsoft Word document.
So now that we can't see it from the moon, let's go ahead and lower the bar a little bit. Can you see the moon from orbit?
Okay.
That's another version of that I've heard.
That's a more reasonable expectation.
So this belief was actually thought debunked when the Chinese astronaut, Yang Liwei, said that he couldn't see the wall from orbit. Case closed.
Okay.
Except this was contested when a man named Leroy Chang, I don't know if he's a Chinese astronaut, the name is confusing in terms of country of origin.
The Leroy throws me off.
But he took a photo from the International Space Station in 2004.
It gets me off his scent.
And this picture was of a region of Mongolia about 200 miles north of Beijing.
Okay.
Small parts of the wall were actually able to be recognized upon further review by photo analysts.
Okay.
So, yes, you can see it with a camera. But that's cheating, I think. And
yeah, I can see things with the microscope, too.
Because Chang did say that he couldn't see the wall with his own eyes when he took the picture. He wasn't sure if he was taking a picture of the wall. And if you guys want to go ahead and look at the show notes that we have in our doc, I have an inclusion of that picture. And I just see what could be a road, what could be a mountain range. But according to NASA, those arrows are pointing to that wall.
It could be the Old Town Road.
So this is difficult for me. I would like to say that if we're going by the conventional sense of you can see the Great Wall of China with the human eye from the moon or from orbit, I'm going to go with a no on that one.
Yeah, I'd have to back you up.
I mean, of course you could bring a telescope to space and shoot it at Earth. That's kind of what a camera is.
I would not count if it's anything past like 40 millimeter. Anything beyond like 40 millimeter lens, I would say.
I do not have the specs on the camera. They were listed, but I did not know you would bring that up. So
you should know better.
But I am just looking at the photo from here, unless it's a crop that looks like a pretty tight focal length. Yeah. So I'd be very surprised if that was less than 40.
Well, I just imagine like 20/20 vision looking out, and if you can discern, be like, that's the Great Wall of China.
I think without an aid that goes beyond human vision.
For the record, the fact that they had to include arrows to show you where the wall was, I'd say that's a no, regardless. Yeah. So we're going to say this one is kind of debunked. Moving on to the next topic, Josh.
Next topic I'm going to be covering is going to be about black holes, which has been in the news a lot lately because they finally were able to take a picture of one, which was really cool. Check that out. We should probably link that in the show notes about that stuff going on.
I want you to consider the fact that we have a confirmed picture of something 55 million fucking miles away before we have a confirmed picture of Bigfoot. That should just kind of hone in on how much some of these these cryptids actually work. Listen to us on Blurry Photos Bullstone.
I was going to say, you tread in dangerous water there. So what I'm specifically going to cover is not about the picture of the black hole, but the sound. And the nothingness of a black hole produces a sound in the key of B flat specifically.
This is a weird one. We had to do a little bit of research for this, to dig this one up, but it's a common thread, and I don't know why.
Yeah, it's specifically B flat. That's what I was more wrapped around than anything, because why B flat?
Instead of A sharp. I mean, music theory.
I agree.
Nerd.
See our episode on the brown note.
I do not know music theory. Please do not at me.
Don't you make more music than the other two of us combined.
Twitter. So anyway, continue, Josh.
For the fourth time. You can't just yell Twitter. Sorry.
Got a butt trumpet, that's about it. Oh, it's farts. So this is absolutely true, but as always with the show, there's kind of a curveball that kind of goes along with it. So earlier observations revealed that there's a lot of light and heat created by black holes. Kind of going back to what you were saying. What are you laughing at?
Black holes be flat.
I think we got an episode.
Don't know why that tickled me so much.
I think we got an episode, Dave. I don't know why it makes me laugh either. It's funny. We now have detected that there is sound as well to go with the light and the heat created by black holes. The pitch of the sound generated by black holes translates into the note of B flat specifically. So yeah, they were right on the money with it.
So the idea of this like pitch happening, because they say there's no sound in space, but that's not completely genuine to say that, because there are some atmospheres. I'm gonna let you continue since you look like very disappointed that I'm saying anything.
You want some toilet paper to finish shitting on my topic?
No.
Okay. More on that later. Stay tuned for that whistle wetter.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. A human would have no chance of hearing this cosmic performance of sorts, because the note is 57 octaves lower than the middle C. So, just to give a comparison,
I don't know what goes beyond sludge metal, but yeah, this black hole has achieved it.
so just to compare, a piano contains only about 7 octaves. Okay.
So if we put, what's 56 divided by 7?
8.
Is it? Yeah. So we only need 8 pianos to make the sound?
It doesn't work like that. Do you not know division?
I don't need to think about it right now.
Okay. At a frequency over a million billion times deeper than the limits of human hearing, this is the deepest note ever detected from an object in the universe.
Okay.
Yeah. Pretty cool, huh? Now, just because that one black hole that everyone knows is, it's called Perseus, I believe is how it's said, has a note of B flat, that doesn't mean that all black holes sing the same tune. There is another black hole called M87, and that is a galaxy that holds one of the universe's most massive black holes, and it has notes as deep as 59 octaves below middle C.
I like M83 songs better.
I was waiting for that reference.
Okay.
Galaxies that have more, and this is to kind of round it out and finish what Ryan's thought earlier, galaxies that have more matter may provide a deeper sound, because this matter could lead to bigger but less common eruptions from the black hole. There are bound to be other important factors to contributing to a black hole specific sound, such as temperature and the gas in its location, but the details aren't well understood.
Well, planets make their own sounds too.
Mm-hmm.
You've heard like the things like the sounds of Saturn's rings or like from Jupiter.
I was gonna bring that up.
It's kind of creepy. They're sped up by an enormous amount, just like the black hole sound is probably sped up, because in order to be able to like get those octaves going with a waveform like that, you kind of have to increase the frequency to get it to something hearable by humans.
Yeah. Who did that song? Black Hole Sound?
Yes. Stone Temple Pilots. Yes, that's exactly why they wrote that song in B flat, down 56 octaves.
They tuned down half a step.
But so where would you put this? Because you just said that one black hole is in B flat.
Yes. So when it comes to something like this, the most well-known and closest to, when I want to say closest because I'm not 100% sure, I think it's the one that we study the most is Perseus. So because that is in B flat, I would lean towards kind of giving people a pass on that.
So the way that,
or the general consensus,
the way that we phrased it on here is a little bit of semantics, but the way we phrased it would be confirmed, because it says that the nothingness of a black hole, of a black hole, produces sound in the key of B flat. Not just any black hole. If we go by A, we're talking about this one specific one, Percy.
Yes, Perseus.
I shortened his name. We're okay. On first name basis.
That's fine.
Well
played.
Anyway, but if we're going by a black hole in general, no, not necessarily.
Right. And when you talk about space being a vacuum and void of sound and all that other stuff, that's not necessarily true, because of the way sound waves travel is that it bounces off of things, right?
Yeah.
Really, really simply put. So you're telling me that there's nothing in space that sound can bounce off of?
Well, it's a fluctuation of
air molecules, right?
Yeah, air molecules or atmosphere, in the most understood way, at least the way our eardrums would interpret it.
Right.
However, space being a vacuum, meaning that there is not a whole lot of pressure there, or almost zero, doesn't mean that there is some matter that could somehow propagate that sound.
There you go.
And also there are radio waves, which is a completely different subject matter.
Yes. And for any other questions you might have, please consult SnappleFact 931 for more information.
Wow. Did you fish that shit up? Yeah, he did.
We did a snap judgment on this a long time ago, and that's why I was like, ah, crap, I should have caught that.
Who wrote it?
Me.
Okay.
That's why I should have caught it. But a fun little fact from it, if you observe an object entering a black hole, once it immediately like touches the event horizon, the moment it starts to cross it,
right,
it appears to freeze in time to you.
Yes.
And it'll never, you'll never see it actually disappear.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Last topic for me. We're going to be talking about another referential thing that I didn't mean to set this up for me to both be like, you know, things seen from space. But this claim is that the light from the Luxor Hotel in Vegas lets one read the newspaper from space.
Hmm.
It's a very interesting and specific claim.
Yeah.
And the idea of it, I guess, is as simply as, I mean, have you, you've been to Vegas, right?
Yeah.
I have not. Greg, have you been to Vegas?
Nay.
Okay. So, you took a long time to say no. Yeah. You had to think about whether you were in Vegas.
I mean, this is going to sound super, I've done a fair bit of traveling, so I have to like think, I do have to think about that. I know that sounds super pretentious.
Anyway, so there's this one hotel. It looks like a giant pyramid because it is a giant pyramid.
And that's the one I was thinking of. Okay, yeah.
And apparently has a really strong beam shooting out of it.
It does.
And the claim is that this beam is so strong that somebody at, like, say, the ISS or on a space shuttle can, or in orbit in general, can read it from the space.
As somebody who's seen it, can I make a comment?
Sure.
Not true. No way.
Okay, I would like
to. Right.
Yeah, actually,
no,
you know, give us a little rundown of like your experience of seeing the Luxor Sky Beam, as it is called colloquially.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's bright. It's big. You can see it from pretty much anywhere in Vegas. Like, you know, when you look up in the sky and you see it, you know exactly what point of reference it is.
But how far up did you look?
I mean, to the clouds.
How far did it go?
To the clouds.
Okay, because airline pilots have claimed to be able to see it from
really
from, you know.
How is that legal then?
That's a really good question. That seems like it would be an FAA violation.
Yeah, because if anything over 200 feet, it has to have a blinking red light so airplane pilots can see it.
And
does Vegas get a pass?
I know it's a very dangerous situation, but nothing tickles me more than that guy that got busted because he lived near an airport and started just like shooting a high-powered laser pointer
at
the windows of planes. And when they went to go see, went to go find who it was so they could arrest him, the reason they caught him was because he started shooting the laser pointer at the helicopter that was looking for him. They didn't even need to use the spotlight.
Well, that's it, America. We got him.
So the Luxor Sky Beam of the Luxor Hotel Casino in Las Vegas is so strong, touted by some as the strongest in the world, which we will get to, that an astronaut can read the newspaper from space using its light. Now, the beam itself consists of 39 xenon lights with 7 kilowatt bulbs. That is nothing to scoff at right there.
No,
7 kilowatts is fucking ridiculous. In total, it's 273,000 watts put together.
To give you a reference. I'm sorry.
Did you read the note that I left in the notes?
No, I did not.
Okay, because I put it in bold green, and I want you to correct me if I'm wrong. The average background light in most film industry is about 1,200 watts.
Yeah, I would say 1Ks to 2Ks are pretty common, and upwards of 4Ks, 8Ks even. But, like, you don't, I mean, you start getting beyond 8,000 watts, it starts becoming
a sauna.
It becomes a fire hazard. So the temperatures of this beam have been measured at 500 degrees Fahrenheit above the surface.
Whoa.
Like just from like about 5 inches above the surface.
That's nuts.
The actual beam. And you'd think it would, you know, exponentially decrease, but it was still about 300 degrees Fahrenheit from 25 feet above the goddamn beams.
That's insane.
You could actually bake on top of it.
Yeah. You could, by most measures, overcook a steak
yeah.
on this actual beam.
Can't see that.
That'd be crazy to actually just make a like film light based way of cooking steaks.
Next Rumor Flies video, if you all donate to our $500 Patreon, we will go to Vegas, build scaffolding over, and try to sous vide a steak.
No, Greg, I will legit do a video of us getting your strongest light that you have in your possession. And trying to cook a steak with
it. The strongest I have is like a 2K.
Well, so
that can still do the trick.
So what you're telling me, a lot of heartache and tummy ache in the Tilton household could have been alleviated. They would not have gotten trichinosis if they just would have eaten on top.
If they just eaten over this light.
Yeah.
So you motherfuckers ready for a second origin of the night?
Yeah, buddy.
In the 1990s, the Luxor spokeswoman who. And all the articles I looked at did not mention who the name of it was, claimed that the astronaut Daniel Brandenstein, Stein, said that the sky beam woke up astronauts in space.
So what's the name of this hotel? The Luxor.
The Luxor, which, yeah. Light. It means light.
Right. That's why I want to make sure I got it right. So Big Luxor is the origin of this.
Yes. Okay. Big Luxor is the origin of this. This was debunked very quickly, as photo analysts at NASA have identified the light in pictures from space, but it was not as distinct for, of a beam apart from the other light pollution seen from the Vegas Strip.
Ah.
Las Vegas is probably one of the most lit, like, concentrated sections of the United States. Yes.
So I didn't want to lead with that because that was an initial thought that I had, because I figured you would get to it. But yeah, Vegas is insane with all the lights and flashes and everything.
There's lots of bright shit there. Mm-hmm. It is like a human, like bug zapper.
Yeah.
Except instead of like losing your life, you just lose your financial stability because of that, all the pretty lights and everything getting you to come in and, you know, gamble and shit like that. And also, moths aren't around in daylight, and neither are people on the Strip. That might be a lie. You've been to Vegas, but I wouldn't think going there during the day would be
good. I can't argue it.
So that's straight up debunked.
Yeah.
There isn't even a record of this guy saying that. I think they were just like, they picked an astronaut and were just like, hey, he said this. And there, I couldn't find the actual...
Wait, what?
I couldn't find a response in favor or against from this Daniel Brandenstein. He was an astronaut.
Oh, I was going to ask if he was real.
But I couldn't find anything of him like saying this or not saying it, or even saying he didn't say it. Now, to go on the little subtopic right there, is it the strongest light in the world?
No.
The answer is no by a, like, such a large margin that I cannot even put the zeros behind it.
I can think of six things that are more illuminant than that.
Let's go with yours. Let's start.
The Mind Stone, the Power Stone.
Okay, stopping you right there.
Okay.
So those don't even output that much light. It would have blinded you. No, it's not the strongest light. And the reason why is because the strongest light in the world, and even more so, is the Texas petawatt laser, which can achieve a power output of one petawatt, which is a million billion watts.
Does it come?
No, 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 do not. No, no.
Okay. All right.
Is it against the Domestication Act?
This brief pulse of light momentarily achieves the status of the brightest light in the known goddamn universe.
Okay.
Oh, so not go the universe.
Briefly, it can be the strongest source of light in the universe. I mean, this petawatt laser, think about the power output that they needed for that.
What can you safely point that at?
They used it to
do Sarah McLachlan commercials.
It doesn't even line up. She didn't advocate for PETA.
Close it up.
So they actually use this. It's now in a defunct laboratory, but I think it was called Nova Labs.
It probably killed everybody.
No, it didn't kill everybody. But they used it to, just like the Large Hadron Collider, they used it to simulate some early conditions of the universe right after the Big Bang.
So with how hot it was, I just thought about this, and this is totally topical, but not relevant.
There were numbers for how hot it could get a piece of aluminum foil within like a femtosecond almost.
I was going to ask if you could light a cigarette off of it.
It was hotter than the sun for a split second.
Huh, okay.
But also, lightning bolts can be too, so it's not that impressive when we're thinking about earthly things.
Cool.
However, we did make something extremely fucking strong. So
I thought you said it was hotter than anything. So like, wouldn't it be hotter than a lightning?
No, it is brighter.
Brighter. I was gonna say, I was like, I don't know about that heat, dog.
He doesn't know about the brightness of things.
Hot and bright are not two mutually exclusive things. They can coincide.
I promise I understand the difference between they mean bright.
No. I mean light energy, and it's not a complete disconnect.
Greg, history major.
I'm not trying to be pejorative in any way.
I'm actually very personally offended.
But anyway.
That's a nice word.
Nice use of pejorative.
I was going to say.
But still offended.
Solid.
I think I was looking for the word patronizing, which means that I completely failed.
No, this is patronizing.
Or belittling. So anyway, no, it's not able to, you're not able to read a newspaper from space with that beam. And also it's not the strongest light in on Earth. So moving on to the last topic, Josh, take us away.
Asteroid belts are unpassable hazards, and if that is not true, then what is?
What is the biggest hazard?
You weren't supposed to read the parentheses, motherfucker.
Oh, okay.
No, keep it going.
Asteroids are the most perfect hazard. Parentheses. Ryan, don't forget to edit. Wait, shit. If you put it on the teleprompter, he's going to read it.
Happy birthday, Mr. Peanut Butter.
Okay, so there are more than 100,000 asteroids larger than 1 kilometer in diameter, okay?
That's scary.
So that should give you some point of reference at how big a lot of asteroids are, okay? I'm not saying it's every asteroid, but a lot of asteroids are big, okay? These objects are distributed within the huge volume of an asteroid belt, right? So their average spacing is several million kilometers, okay? Collisions don't happen all that often. They're actually very rare. And
you mean asteroid to asteroid collision?
Yes.
But like, are there actual cases of, well, I'm sure you're going to get to it, so ignore it if you are, but are there actual cases of asteroid fields? Like, is that a thing?
Yeah. No. That's the,
I mean, that's an asteroid belt is just, yeah, it's a circular.
No, but
field.
Like, yes. Sorry, like as depicted in Star Wars, where there are closer proximities. Probably
it
not.
It depends on what your definition is. Okay. How
you have to dodge them at one after the other.
Yeah, but if I'm staring right at you and throw a piece of paper at me and I don't move, then you know that's on me. But if I take one step to the left, I'll get out the way. Depends on how big the volume is, you know.
So, Josh, permission to potentially get ahead of the topic.
Yeah, permission granted. Welcome aboard.
Okay, so space references, yay. So what I understand is maybe like the tiny ones are the ones you have to worry about going at such high speed because you don't see them and you run into them or some shit like that. Or at least that was the concern that I've read about, like, going near faster than light travel. I don't know what it's like for a regular spaceship where it just bounces off. Yeah, but it'd be bullets. If you're going that fast, it doesn't matter which one is which. If you hit it, it can just, like, pierce straight through or something like that.
Yes, that is a concern to an extent.
Okay.
Okay. I'm going to try to think of the best way to put it. So an average one, I'm going to give you a point of reference here. An average 1 kilometer asteroid suffers one collision every few billion years. So that should give you an idea of the spacing.
Very good insurance rates for them.
Yes. They are not grouped closely together. And there's a couple reasons why, which I mean, I'm going to get into, but that should give you a point of reference of if you're traveling in a spaceship and you see an asteroid belt, an asteroid field, whatever you want to call it. It's very rare that you can't just kind of hook a left and go for a few minutes and go around it.
So you're not going to have to worry about that scene from Star Wars Episode 2.
No.
With Boba Fett and Jango Fett on the back of an asteroid just waiting to get Obi-Wan.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. But what was the run that Han Solo made in like 12 kilowatts?
The Kessel Run.
Thank
Kessel
you.
Run. 12 parsecs.
12 parsecs. Whatever. Okay. Jesus, I'm sorry.
It was 12.
Yeah, so they collide every, you know, once one collision every few billion years, or maybe one or two collisions over the lifetime of the solar system.
Jesus.
Okay, so it's not very prevalent. That's something you have to worry about.
So they stick to their lanes.
Yeah, pretty much. They stay in their lane. Spacecraft pass through an asteroid belt with virtually no chance of collision. And in fact, considerable effort is required for a close flyby of even one asteroid.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah, we did have to calculate that. There was that whole conspiracy theory that we were crashing a satellite into an asteroid because it was an Armageddon scenario, like
yes.
The Bruce Willis movie, and they were actually just trying to deflect the path of it from Earth.
Well, so the spacing is also so large that that seen from one asteroid, even the nearest 1 kilometer asteroid, would be too faint to see with a telescope.
Really?
Yeah, so that tells you pretty much right there that asteroid belts, I'm not saying they're not a thing, it's just a lot bigger of a scale than what you expect.
Okay. So really not much of an issue to worry about when it comes to us trying to explore the final frontier.
Well, so the thing about it is if an asteroid collides at very high speeds, they actually may break apart and form a new asteroid family. And that's kind of what I was thinking about when you were talking about them breaking up into little pieces. It'll make a new asteroid family, but not like something so significant you would have to dodge and weave and, you know, run through a kind of thing.
Okay.
Low velocity, on the other hand, the low velocity collisions may actually just merge two asteroids.
Really?
Yes.
A little family, mm-hmm. A new family.
Another
when
new
When two
asteroid
become
family.
One.
Mm-hmm. That's like the, when they rebooted Futurama, it was like the first or second episode. It was the V-Giny. giant satellite.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It was two satellites that basically smashed together and became like a super satellite.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. 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 I totally forgot about that. But so to my parentheses now, what is the biggest problem with space travel then? And it's really two simple answers, kind of covered by Ryan. One is radiation.
I'm just going to say a little primer. If you want to know like even more about this before Josh gets into it, we did it. I think it's going to go along with the moon landing episode that we did on Patreon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Some of it will. And the other one is cosmic rays, which for those of you who don't know is the name of a nice little diner inside of the Magic Kingdom at Walt Disney World.
I thought it was just like an enlightened and ascended Ray Romano.
So as far as like radiation being a threat, you realize that being on Earth, we are exposed to radiation every day. You know, I don't think that's a secret, right? That number is amplified in space by a lot, by like 80 times as much.
Because there is no sort of protection for us unless we make it.
Getting there.
As we had said.
It kind of, so radiation and cosmic rays kind of go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it boils down to that there is no protection from radiation inside of space.
And we've covered radiation previously in our nuclear survival myth episode, which I actually caught some flack for. Sorry. But yes, if you want a little bit more explanation of how that radiation works, you can listen to that one as a little primer.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. Cosmic rays, on the other hand, that's the real bad motherfucker. It's high energy radiation originating from outside of our solar system and the sun.
Is this different from UV, or was it pretty much synonymous with UV rays?
It's pretty much synonymous with it. From the research that I saw, it kind of just lumped it all into one.
I think it's UV rays.
Yeah. So on Earth, we are protected from cosmic rays because of our magnetic field. And you wouldn't have that same protection outside in space like we kind of just said with radiation. One single particle of a cosmic ray has the power to plow through human tissue and just decimate our DNA.
Okay.
Yeah. It could cause things like cell mutations or what's the other thing? Cancer.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
That's the other big one.
That sounds like an alpha particle, honestly.
And the last little tidbit, because when you mentioned like space travel earlier, when
or neutron. I don't know. I don't remember that episode as well. So I keep relearning and unlearning radiation like every 2 years. So
When you talked about space travel and going to Mars, my ears kind of perked up because this is what I thought of. If you're going to Mars, scientists estimate that the potential for getting cancer is as high as 30%.
Whoa. So, okay. That makes like those people are just like, yeah, I would love to go to Mars. I don't care if you just send me over there. Like, do you know how I think Elon Musk was supposed to send a lot of people to like a one-way trip to Mars, or like getting people to volunteer.
Yeah.
I remember there was some program talking about doing that.
Well, that's a big problem that you might encounter is cosmic rays and radiation exposure.
So they should actually stuff three times the amount of people that they intended to take over in that flight to Mars.
Yeah, because not all of them are going to make it.
Damn it.
Yeah.
Damn.
Really fascinating.
Yeah. So there is actually a concern, I guess, dipping into the Patreon a little bit, that there was a radiation belt around the Earth mm-hmm. on the way to the moon that no human would be able to survive. It turns out that something as easy as aluminum foil would actually be able to deflect most of the radiation that was going through,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty much what the lunar lander was made of. That thing was a tin can with a little bit of programming
they
in it.
They still use a lot of aluminum foil. I was watching, it was like...
I'm very much reducing this. I know...
No, I know.
I'm doing the exact opposite of exaggerating. I'm making this more boring than it actually is.
Well, I was watching the Falcon Heavy launch and land the other day at work. It was awesome. It was like 3 a.m. and nothing to do. So I was watching it and I remember seeing this like magnificent display of like technology and how far we've come and all this cool stuff that we have. And I remember I'm watching the feed and I go, is that aluminum foil? Like, yeah, that's aluminum foil. We still use it. Yeah. It's still in play here, fellas.
It's very utilitarian.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. But yeah, so, radiation and cosmic rays are the bigger threat than asteroid belts or asteroid fields.
Much more scary, but also much less exciting for some reason.
Kind of like tax evasion, a much bigger deal than quicksand.
Somehow I can understand that right there.
I don't know where that came from.
Okay, so I guess a little quick boil down. So the first one, no, you don't freeze to death. A lot more things happen before that. your blood does boil and you don't explode. So that's one of three.
My first topic, the dark side of the moon, I think. Yeah, I would say the dark side of the moon is a real thing, even though it's correctly called the far side of the moon. But it is there. We don't, because we kind of came from the angle of like two-pronged approach of, is there an actual dark side of the moon? Yeah, there's always a dark side of the moon because there's always a light side of the moon. It just depends on which, where the sun is.
The way we think of it, yeah.
It's yeah. Not. And is there another side of the moon that we don't see? And that's absolutely true.
Okay. So then the Great Wall of China, I would say, cannot be seen by the human eye from either orbit or the moon, especially the moon, if not from orbit. You mm-hmm. know.
So elegantly put by you, black holes be flat. True.
Yes, black holes be flat. So, and then also, lastly, well, okay, that black hole is B flat. There is a black hole that's B flat.
There is, but it's the one that we are most associated with and most common knowledge of. So that's
they
why
they definitely do have a resonant sound. I think that would kind of qualify it as true.
Yeah, I don't want to get too nitpicky on these things. You know, like
it's kind of what we do, though.
I know, but when you get into the general consensus of like when. When people say black holes, I mean, I would assume that's their point of reference.
And our quote did say a black hole. It didn't say
it's true.
A black hole in general.
Yeah,
we talked about a specific one, just mm-hmm. didn't know it.
The snap judgment, they say black holes are going to be flat, and that is false.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The Luxor light from Vegas can be used to read a newspaper in space. Nope. Just good PR.
Just a thought real quick. Why am I going to read an old newspaper in space?
What you mean?
Because I had to take it up there with me.
Holy shit, you're right.
They didn't throw it.
Also, a highly flammable object that probably has pieces of it flaking off, getting behind control panels.
Oh, yeah. Most of the time, they're not even allowed to bring pencils up there because of the fire hazard.
Mm-hmm. See whatever episode we covered, the Russian space pen.
Yes. Yeah. So, I'm just remembering things. But yeah, that's actually an extremely good point.
So self-referential.
Yeah. Josh, that's a really... That's a really good point. Like, I'm just going to read this later, like when I'm in space.
Yeah, I'm going
to
take
the
it with me
X amount of months that I'm up there.
This is a really good Garfield comic, but I think in like a couple of days, I'm really going to want to read it. So I'm just going to hold off right now.
Yeah. All the funnies are really good this week, I heard.
And the last topic that I covered was the asteroid belts, how it's going to be hard to get through. And that's false because they're not that big to where you have to duck, dive, dodge, dip, and dodge.
If anything, it almost sounds like it'd be really hard to see an asteroid going through an asteroid belt.
It is harder to see an asteroid than it is to go through an asteroid field, yeah.
Okay. So do we have anything else before Greg gives us the socials and the ways to find us that you may have not already heard about, dear listener?
I don't have anything.
I like space. I'm just going to say that.
This was fun, dude. And you kind of touched on it about...
The moon one was super interesting.
Well, when you talk about... you're welcome. This is something we wanted to cover. Yeah, we held off on it for a while, but I'm glad we did. It was a good one. It was fun. I'm like, I really enjoy space. I get anxiety from space, but I think it's really just a really fascinating topic, and it's really cool to sit there and like dive into these things because I don't really think about a lot of this stuff with space.
Hey, you know what? Michio Kaku, I never tried to reach you, but if you feel like doing the space episode number 2, go ahead and hit us up.
We'd like it. Chris Hadfield, we'd love to have you on.
Yeah, Chris Hadfield. You know what? Any celebrity that listens to us, just Twitter. I will say.
I'll spare you.
Don't add us. You know, we don't want to out you. Just DM us. If you happen to think that you were even, a local celebrity, let us know. We need to feel better about ourselves until we get 200 reviews.
Or if you're not a celebrity and you want to just be on the show, let us know.
You know, I think that Daniel Day-Lewis might listen to us.
While he's cobbling?
Yeah. I think, like, what better to do while cobbling than listen to podcasts?
I can't really argue against that. I'm pretty sure that's how Seattle operates all the time, at least in Portland.
Yeah, so famous people, DM us. Even if you consider yourself famous and nobody else does, DM us anyway. Otherwise, at RumorFlies on Twitter and Instagram. And then Greg, you take over the rest.
Y'all can always find us at RumorFliesPodcast.com. We are at RumorFlies on all social media, as Ryan mentioned, Facebook.com/RumorFlies. I'm going to get that MySpace page up and running soon. Patreon.com/RumorFlies if you want to donate to the show. We really appreciate it. It helps keep the light on, pay for hosting, things like that. And pretty sure that's it.
Yeah. if you want to send us some snail mail, Greg's address is 723. What's the rest of it?
Not even.
What's the rest of it, Greg?
Not even. 723, go fuck yourself.
There it's 723 New Orleans, Louisiana. Anyway.
What's the White House? What was it? Pennsylvania Avenue?
Yeah.
1600. Anyway, thank you very much, everybody, for listening. We really appreciate the traction that we've been getting lately. Have a good one. For this episode of Rumor Flies, I'm Ryan.
I'm Josh.
I'm Greg.
Bye.
Why not? Bye.